Coming Friday, November 20th and Saturday, November 21st, Issues Etc. 24. It's a live 24-hour broadcast of Issues Etc. from 9 in the morning central on November 20th through 9 in the morning central on November 21st. This year's theme, The Gospel of John. Issues Etc. 24, Friday, November 20th and Saturday, November 21st. Listen live at issuesetc.org.
Now, I had a lot of disagreements with George W. Bush on policy, but I was very proud after 9/11 when he was adamant and clear about the fact that this is not a war on Islam.
The government is already spending $500 million a year to provide contraceptives through Planned Parenthood clinics. Why does the government need the Little Sisters to do Planned Parenthood's work for them?
Long before we arrive in 2015, the church has been told it was on the wrong side of history. And by the way, that may even be true. We may be on the wrong side of history, but we're not on the wrong side of eschatology.
Wisconsin turkey producers love Issues Etc.
Well, it happens to be a free country that we often say, don't we? It's America, isn't it? This is a free country. We usually do that when we don't want someone telling us what we can or can't do, especially when that someone is the government. And Christians have been saying that, maybe even with a question mark at the end of it lately. It's a free country, isn't it? Because simply making statements, expressing one's religious views, one's strongly held beliefs, as it's often said, can get you in a little bit of trouble, can get you in a lot of trouble, can lose you your job if you act according to your conscience. Even if you think about acting according to your conscience, sometimes Christians will feel threatened in a society that is supposed to be one founded on religious liberty. How important is it that Christians continue to assert and fight for that very liberty, not only for themselves, but for all religious beliefs in the United States? Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. We're coming to you from the studios of Lutheran Public Radio in Collinsville, Illinois. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. Dr. Peter Scare is going to join us. We're going to talk about two subjects, religious liberty and a statement by the National Association of Evangelicals that Jesus was a refugee. We'll take that one apart a little bit later with him. After our conversation with Dr. Scare, we're going to talk about the TV miniseries AD, The Bible Continues. It's been released in DVD. We'll get a general review of that mini-series. Terry Mattingly joins us after that to talk about media coverage of the caliphate being proclaimed by ISIS. And then we'll round everything off on this Thursday afternoon talking with Pastor Brian Ketchelmeyer. Our regular series, Christ in the Old Testament, will be in Daniel's vision of four beasts, Son of Man, the Ancient of Days, all sorts of strange things happening that Daniel sees. Where is Christ in all of that? That's the last half hour of Issues Etc. Now, you can join us for the next 2 hours with your questions or your comments. 1-877-623-6943 is our call-in number. Our in-studio email address, talkback@issuesetc.org. Our Twitter address, @issuesetc. Dr. Peter Scare is a regular guest. He is Associate Professor of New Testament at Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana. He spoke earlier this week at the Indiana State House about the exercise, the free exercise of religion. Dr. Scare, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Yeah, glad to be with you, Todd.
What business does a clergyman, a pastor, have addressing people at the State House on the subject of religious liberty?
Yeah, this is not something that really I looked for. I mean, I think like a lot of Christians, like a lot of people, there are a lot of better ways or happier ways I'd like to spend my day. I'd rather be out going for a walk in the woods and going to the gym and just enjoying my life. But I can't help but notice, you know, that our religious liberty is under assault. And I notice you've talked about it, but there's an element of fear, I think, that's taken over a lot of Christians. And I see friends who are professors who are losing their jobs because they've taken a stance on traditional marriage and for saying that homosexuality is a sin. I have friends who are photographers who are afraid. They won't take pictures of weddings because they are afraid of the lawsuits. And I see Christians in every occupation under attack. And I just feel that as a pastor, I have a certain responsibility to stand up for liberty. And so this is not something I really wanted, but it's something I feel compelled to do.
The assault on religious liberty, as you put it earlier, has taken on a peculiar form, and there's a subtle form and then a more overt form. I want to talk about the more subtle to begin with, and that is what I would call the curtailing of the definition of religious liberty. The Constitution guarantees us the free exercise of religion. That's kind of in the last 10 years or so been pared down to religious freedom, which has been defined as, well, sure, believe whatever you want to believe. You go to church on Sunday, whatever day you go to church, or wherever you go, do whatever you want to in there. Believe whatever you want to. That's the extent of your religious freedom. There it is. You're free to essentially believe anything you want to within and do anything you want to within the walls of your religious institution. What does that say to
you?
Yeah,
and this is, I noticed at first, I think, with President Obama when he spoke about religious liberty, and he talked about the freedom to worship rather than to live our lives as Christians. And I've seen, you know, good Christians who have kind of bought into it, and they're not thinking maybe perhaps through all of this. But yeah, the free exercise of religion was not simply given to the churches or to pastors, but was given. It's a right in our Constitution. It's noted in our Constitution. But it's a right given by God to live according to our convictions. In whatever we do, that means to run our business according to our religious convictions. It means to live our lives in the public square. And I think this is the kind of thing that we need to assert, because it's not simply on Sunday morning. And the thing that really got me about what's happening in Indiana, the thing I'm worried about, is that now our own Republican Party is working to put forward a law that would protect, for instance, as you say, churches and pastors and perhaps religious organizations. But, you know, that doesn't give me any comfort. I'm just as concerned about the person in the pew. I'm more concerned about them. And I feel, you know, this is a great way, I think, for the secular world to drive a wedge between, I think, pastors and their people. Because if the people feel that they are under assault and while their own pastors are somehow protected, I think that's going to be a cause for bitterness and resentment. I think that if our people are to suffer, we must also be on the front lines. I don't think we can be content to say, well, as long as I can preach my sermon on a Sunday, I'm not going to worry about the baker and the photographer and the businessman. And you know, when we look at the assault on religious liberty, our basic core belief that marriage is between a man and a woman, this is what is going to be the cause of the persecution. And if you don't think it's going to affect everything, we can think about Christian counselors and psychiatrists. What happens in the public school when sex education is mandated to be taught, and you as a public school teacher will then have to teach the LGBT agenda? I think this is coming from all directions upon us, and I think it's incumbent upon us now that we speak and speak loudly in the public square so that the way bullies win, I always say the way bullies win is they create fear and they create silence, and the way freedom is lost is when we silence ourselves. So freedom not exercised will be taken away. And this is not, for me, it's a defense. It's a defense of Christians who are under the gun. I'm standing up for the Kelvin Cochran, who was that firefighter in Atlanta who lost his job simply because he wrote a book on marriage, and for Baron L. Stutzman, who ran up, you know, she sold flowers, and she had gay people working for her. She loved all people, but didn't want to arrange the flowers for a gay wedding and was fined out of business. So a lot of people are being hurt, and I feel that we must stand with them.
How do you respond, and this comment often comes from our fellow Christians, you alluded to it earlier, how do you respond to someone who says, look, they're not really impinging upon what the church is here to do, which is to proclaim the gospel, And what you're talking about is churches meddling in politics or individual Christians out there meddling in politics. You know, it's every man for himself out there. And as long as they're not telling me what I have to preach or how I have to practice worship on Sunday morning, I'm fine.
Yeah, I love the way that you worded that, because that actually brings me back. I remember I was doing a paper on abortion, of all things, and I looked back to a Reader's Digest article. It was 1966 in May, and they had two articles in it, and it was really interesting. One was, "Let's Speak Out on Abortion," and it was a very pro-abortion article. And the other was, and it was actually titled, just as you say, "The Church Should Stop Meddling in Politics." And it was written in a way to silence Christians, saying, hey, you just stick to your gospel message, or you preach the gospel, what you're doing, and you just stay out of the way. Well, if good people don't go into politics, then the bad people will, in fact, create their tyrannies. And it is a tyranny. We as Christian citizens are called to stand for our neighbor. I mean, this is why we vote pro-life, and we stand up for pro-life. And when we stand up for marriage, it's not meddling in anything, but we're simply defending children. And this is true with abortion, and this is true with marriage. I think we need to get our message out. We need to get people able to talk about this. Our own Christians need to be able to talk about it. They need to be able to understand that, and they know this, that's the thing, but they need to be able to articulate it, that every child has a biological mother and a father. The mother will always be present at the birth of that child. The purpose of marriage is to make sure, as best we can, that the father will be there for that child also. And, you know, so marriage was not just made up out of, you know, because some government decided, this will be a nice ceremony to have, but it was for the raising of children. Now, this is the issue for which Christians are being persecuted, but it is it's not having to do simply with politics, but it has to do with the protection of children, because, I mean, this is what we know, is children do best with a mother and a father. Now, a person might not agree with what I'm saying here, but it is a rational position, and it's a position born of love, and I think that's what we need to tell our people.
Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation with Dr. Peter Scare. We're talking about religious liberty, and then a few minutes later, we'll talk about a statement by the National Association of Evangelicals that Jesus was a refugee. He's Associate Professor of New Testament at Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana, and he spoke earlier at the Indiana State House about the free exercise of religion. Stay tuned.
Coming Friday, November 20th, and Saturday, November 21st, Issues Etc. 24. It's a live 24-hour broadcast of Issues Etc. from 9 in the morning Central on November 20th through 9 in the morning Central on November 21st. This year's theme, the Gospel of John. Issues Etc. 24, Friday, November 20th, and Saturday, November 21st. Listen live at issuesetc.org.
Emmanuel Evangelical Lutheran Church of Terre Haute, Indiana, is a congregation called, gathered, and strengthened by Christ's Word and Sacraments, confessional, evangelical, liturgical, serving our community and the students of Indiana State University and Rose Holman Institute of Technology, and reaching out to the nations as a congregation of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. Find out more about Emmanuel at www.emmanuelevluth.org.
Issues Etc. 24 begins in 18 hours and 45 minutes. You're listening to Issues Etc.
In my family, education means cultivating wisdom and virtue by teaching what is good, true, and beautiful. Memoria Press makes this type of education possible with their classical Christian curriculum. Characterized by simplicity, quality, and affordability, Memoria Press gives my children a rich classical education. Get $5 off your next order by using the coupon code LPR. For more information, go to memoriapress.com. Memoria Press, saving Western civilization one student at a time.
For 20 years, we've lifted our voices and instruments to the hymns of Stephen Starkey. Now, CPH has the first ever CD collection of Pastor Starkey's works titled, We Praise You and Acknowledge You, O God. This 12-track CD includes nearly an hour of music from the most beloved Lutheran hymn writer of our time. Order now. Use promotion code URA. We Praise You and Acknowledge You, O God, is only $15.99. CPH.org.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about religious liberty. Dr. Peter Scare is our guest, Associate Professor of New Testament, Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana. He spoke earlier at the Indiana State House this week about the free exercise of religion. One more question for you on the free exercise before we go on to talk about this statement from the National Association of Evangelicals about Jesus being a refugee. The First Amendment, which is kind of constitutionally what we're talking about here, contains a number of freedoms that are considered to be they're not like other freedoms granted or recognized in the Constitution. They're the fundamental freedoms, the freedoms upon which all the other ones get built and are maintained. And the free exercise of religion is but one among those. I wonder if in the Christian effort to defend the freedom of the free exercise of religion, a good case to be made in the public square is, look, we're for the whole First Amendment. Freedom of the press, freedom of assembly, freedom to have our grievances addressed by government, all of those things.
Yeah, and this is it's really interesting to me because a week before I did this rally, and by the way, I mean, this rally, I think they filled the State House with, it was well over 1,000 people. Some people said 1,400 people. So people are hungry for champions, I think, and that should encourage our fellow Christians out there. But the week before, I had the chance to talk with a group of us pastors, went and talked with the editorial board of the Indianapolis Star. And the Indianapolis Star is, they're not reporting the news, they're actually making the news because they are promoting this LGBT agenda, including a new law which would make SOGI, or sexual orientation and gender identity, a protected class. Well, while they're promoting all of this, it just struck me that this same group is depending on the freedom of the press, which is found in the First Amendment, as is the freedom of religion. So they're using their First Amendment right in order to crush ours. And then the other thing that kind of struck me, too, is when you think about all the turmoil that's been happening on campuses lately, that I mean, it's notorious that the secular left rules the college campuses today. And what you find there increasingly are speech codes. You're not allowed to say certain things which either go against a kind of prescribed agenda, which is usually the agenda of it is always the agenda of the secular left. So the same Oregon, the Indianapolis Star, is promoting a secular left agenda, which is destroying freedom of religion, but also the freedom of speech. And I don't know how long the freedom of speech can survive, or I don't know how long the freedom of the press can survive if the freedom of speech is curtailed. So yeah, these things are intrinsically bound together to our freedom to believe what we. It's not just simply to believe what we want to believe, but then to express those beliefs in what we write and in what we say and in how we live. And like I say, I'm all for a tolerant society. I think, you know, we can live and let live, and we can come to, you know, we can disagree. But what's happening now is that the thought police have now outlawed and fined those beliefs which go against the predominant agenda, which is, again, being promoted, strangely enough, by a newspaper that also depends upon that First Amendment.
The other issue I wanted to take up with you is a recent statement from a group called World Relief that's an offshoot of the National Association of Evangelicals. The statement says, and I'll read it to you, I'd like your reaction. It's talking about the refugee situation, in particular Syrian refugees. Here's a statement from World Relief. Jesus himself was a refugee. He fled as a small child to Egypt when there was a tyrannical government threatening his life. So as Christians, we don't really have a choice but to welcome refugees. What are your thoughts on that connection between our current refugee situation and that story from Matthew's gospel?
I mean, I suppose the Bible can be used to guilt any government into doing any sort of thing. And the problem is, I'm not so sure if all of these refugees, I suppose, were Jesus, then I think it'd be a lot easier. The problem is that government leaders are also tasked with protecting their people. I mean, that's the first reason to have a government is to provide safety for the people, and that includes a police and an army to defend the borders against enemies. And what we have here is, we have a certain responsibility. And I mean, this could be, and I can't presume to know who these refugees are. But I do know that there could be, it's legitimate to ask whether there is a danger involved. And I think about this as a father. I do think that we need to do our best to help those who are in trouble. However, I'm not so sure that I would just take any person into my house if I did not know them and they could pose a danger or a threat to my wife or my daughter. So also, a country has a certain responsibility. I mean, I don't know, you know, who's going to take the blame, I guess, or who will take the responsibility if we do allow people into this country who end up being, in fact, a threat and then cause violence and harm. And the other part is, you know, this is a little more sensitive, but I think it needs to be said, that we are dealing with refugees that have the Islamic faith. And I think when we think about that, we have to be cognizant of the fact that Islam is not simply a religion, but it's an ideology, and it's a totalitarian ideology at that, in the sense that Islam, by its very nature, and I think this is why a lot of Christians are confused, because Christians are quite at home in a pluralistic society in which people share many views. But Islam, by its nature, is not simply a kingdom of the heavens. Like Jesus says, "My kingdom is not of this earth." In Islam, the kingdom is definitely of this earth. So they are all about the acquiring of territory and the taking over of government and the application of Sharia law, and violence is considered to be an appropriate way to advance that. So we better know what we're dealing with here. So yeah, I think, now again, that doesn't mean I have the wisdom to say how many refugees should come in or not come in, but I do know it's a very legitimate concern to ask, will there in fact be harm to my neighbor? Am I in fact... will I be held accountable if my fellow citizens lose their lives because we've let terrorists in?
Well, and I think it's also a confusion. I want your thoughts here, if you would, Peter. It's a confusion between what the individual Christian is called to do, which is help everybody, including your enemy, and what governments have been tasked to do, not only by our constituting documents, but more importantly, why government has been established on earth by God in general. What are your thoughts?
Well, you know, the thing is there, of course, these are two different questions in the sense that, yes, the government, we could say all Christians are called to help. That does not mean, though, that all, even if it were to the Christian, that you would be called to bring all people into your home. That could be a very foolish decision that would actually bring a greater harm to those who you love the most. Now, as far as... I did laugh because in some of these articles, the other kind of biblical story that's brought up is the parable of the Good Samaritan. Well, in the parable of the Good Samaritan, the man meets the man by the side of the road, and he dresses his wound, and he puts him up in an inn. He's not taking that man into his own home, although I think that's a fine thing to do, too. But when we're talking of, and you know, perhaps there are other ways of handling this situation, but first and foremost, a government leader's responsibility is to keep the people safe, and innocent people could be put in harm and jeopardy by this. So, yeah, I think we need to be a little bit more serious about this, because if they do harm, somebody will be held accountable, and the innocent blood could very well be shed. What happened in Paris should not be taken lightly.
And is the parable of the Good Samaritan intended to help us, or is it intended to, show us good refugee policy?
I mean, first and foremost, as we know, it's about Christ and his love for us. And now that surely that should also mean, first, that Christ is the neighbor to us who shows his love, who dresses up our wound, who pays the price for our healing, and then takes us to the cross and the atonement. Surely that does mean that we should love our neighbor. The question is how? And I don't see the connection, though, that how to love the neighbor, though, is not told specifically or in every case. We've got to use our minds here as well, because if we're going to show true love to our neighbor, we're going to keep our people safe.
So coming back around to the issue of religious liberty, I take it that this is not something you expect to go away anytime soon. This isn't, like, for instance, the speech that you made there at the Indiana State House is not something you expect to be able to kind of shelve at any time soon. This is a fight in the long haul, isn't it?
Yeah, I really wish it would go away. I don't want to do it anymore, but this is what, I think what we have to do. And the other thing is this, I think there are two things. One is we need to teach our young people, and we need to be very intentional about it, to teach our people what marriage is, what the Christian position is. And I think also, there have been so many passages in which our Lord talks about persecution. And I can be honest, I mean, I don't think I've ever really taken them seriously. I've always thought about persecution as, even though I haven't said so, I've always thought about persecution as something that happens to other people and in distant lands. And I think it's coming home to me now, the sobering fact that what our Lord said in the Beatitudes, the first ones are so beautiful, but blessed are you when men revile you and persecute you and say all sorts of evil against you for my sake. And then, I mean, it's throughout our Lord's teachings that he tells us to expect these things. The world will hate you because of me. And now the other thing is this, though, is it's an opportunity for proclamation that any chance, and I try to do it, I argue on in a secular way for the things that I believe, but I always try also to tell others why I have this hope that is within me. And this can be still for us an opportunity, just like it was for the apostles, to be on the stage and not worry what we will say, but simply to proclaim the things of Christ to a world that is desperately in need of hearing the good news of Christ, who is, and I always say it, who is our bridegroom. I mean, he is the one who laid down his life for his bride, the church, who loved us as blemished as we are, and then presents us spotless and clean through the waters of baptism. This is an opportunity for us to perhaps reach people who we've never might have been able to talk to before. So, take what the Lord has given us. It's not, again, it's not something in some ways that, certainly not that I would have wished for. I kind of, a more peaceful life is what I would choose. But this is the world which our Lord has given us, and I think there's good reason to rejoice in it.
Dr. Peter Scher is Associate Professor of New Testament at Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana. He spoke earlier this week at the Indiana State House about the free exercise of religion. Peter, thank you very much for your time, and keep up the good work.
Hey, thanks a lot, Todd.
When we come back, we're going to spend some time doing a mini-review of the mini-series, AD, The Bible Continues, that's just come out on DVD. Pastor Ted Giese will be our guest. Standing Firm in a Hostile World is the theme of the San Antonio Biblical Worldview Conference, February 5th and 6th. This confessional Lutheran conference features Issues Etc. guest Adam Francisco, David J. Weber, Joe Abrahamson, attorney Mark Stern, and Professor Alan Quist. If you are in Texas or would like some warmer weather in February, check out the San Antonio Biblical Worldview Conference, February 5th and 6th at faithlutheransa.org. faithlutheransa.org.
In Hosea 4, we read, "My people are destroyed by lack of knowledge." At the CLCC, we educate Lutherans on being Lutheran. The Confessional Lutherans for Christ's Commission treasure our Lutheran beliefs and think that all Christians would if they learned what we believe, teach, and confess. Visit our website at theclcc.org. See what we have to offer. Get on our mailing list, or better yet, join us. And encourage your pastors to hold an event in your area. For more information, go to theclcc.org.
Have you been too busy to get your associate's, bachelor's, or master's degree? Concordia University, Wisconsin offers 50 online educational options. Find out more at issuesetc.org. Click the Concordia University online logo and enter the program code ISSUES to waive your application fee. Concordia University, Wisconsin is here to strengthen and support the church. Lifelong Lutheran learning. issuesetc.org and click Concordia University, Wisconsin online.
LutheranReformation.org is the brand new one-stop shop for all things Reformation. It's your source for news, events, history, videos, activities, educational resources, and much, much more. New resources will be added regularly, each one designed to help you celebrate and remember the 500th anniversary of the Reformation. Because Reformation 2017 is still all about Jesus. Visit LutheranReformation.org today. LutheranReformation.org.
Issues Etc. 24 begins in 18 hours and 30 minutes. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues Etc. 300. Zion Lutheran, Muscoota, Illinois. Redeemer Lutheran, Fort Wayne, Indiana. Grace Lutheran, Auburn, Michigan. Zion Lutheran, Pleasant Plains, Illinois. The Lutheran Church of the Incarnate Word, Rochester Hills, Michigan. Zion Lutheran, Laramie, Wyoming. Redeemer Lutheran, Seymour, Indiana. Zion Lutheran, East Moline, Illinois. And Peace Lutheran, South St. Louis County. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Just go to our website, issuesetc.org, and click support. When your congregation joins the Issues Etc. 300, we'll advertise your congregation on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. journal. issuesetc.org, click support. The Issues Etc. 300.